First question, briefly tell me about your broadcast career before coming to Wacky, where you started, stations you worked at, and where you were before WAKY. I started in radio in 1967 in Pine Bluff, Arkansas at KOTN, 1490 in the land of cotton. That was my hometown, or at least the town where I grew up. And I went to work for Buddy Dean, who had been a radio legend on the East Coast, primarily in Baltimore. Buddy was from Arkansas, and he retired at a fairly early age, came back and bought some stations. And it was at one of his stations that I began in 1967. Steve Warren, the consultant from Texas, was actually the guy that hired me. Steve was 19 and I was 16. I had to get somebody to cover my paper route so I could start doing the night show. After that, I worked in college at the University of Arkansas and the University of Missouri, and then in San Antonio and in Denver. And in October 73, went to CKLW in Detroit and started out as a swing guy, ended up doing morning drive. But that is where I met Gary Burbank. And Gary and I became very close friends. Gary, of course, had already worked at Wacky. In 1976, Gary decided to go back to Louisville to work at WHAS, and he talked Johnny Randolph into hiring me when Tom Dooley left to do afternoons on Wacky. Now, that was actually a pretty unusual situation because WHAS and WAKY were very competitive. And here Gary and I would sometimes even ride to work together and do afternoons and try to beat each other's brains out in the ratings. And then after it was over, I'd go over to his house and eat his food and play with his baby daughter. Randolph didn't want to hire me, by the way, because he said, well, you've done mornings on the number one station in the top five market. You'll be here for 6 months, and then I'll be looking for somebody else as soon as you get a better offer. But in fact, I stayed for nearly 10 years. I was aware of Wacky long before that, because of its reputation, because of the quality of the people that had worked there long before I did. And in fact, somewhere I have a letter from 1972, I think, where I'd applied for a job, and Johnny Randolph wrote back, and he wasn't hiring me, but he sent me a nice response. So that really covers question two, how did you get the Wacky gig and when? Question three, what did you think about Wacky when you first got there? Impressions of the sound, its importance in Louisville radio at the time, etc. Was it a big deal to work at Wacky? And if so, why? Well, I've talked about the fact that Wacky had a national reputation that I was well aware of, and so did Johnny Randolph, and that I had applied there earlier. It was a big deal to work at Wacky, but keep in mind, again, I was coming from CKLW. I was coming from a 50,000-watt clear channel station that at the time was the only station in the top 10 in national QM outside of New York, L.A., or Chicago. So Louisville was a much smaller market. But question four is, did your on-air act change when you came to Wacky? How do you think it evolved during your time there? It really didn't change at all. The on-air act didn't change at all. I tried to do the same job at Wacky that I'd done at CKLW, and in terms of delivery and approach, I think it was very similar. But of course, my role at Wacky over the years changed considerably as the station evolved. I ended up going into news to be Bill Bailey's sidekick in morning drive when Reed Yaden left. That, of course, was a major change. And then I went to afternoons and then back to do mornings by myself and then program director. So there were all kinds of roles for me at Wacky that changed during the time there. What was Johnny Randolph like to work for and with as PD, and how about Mike McVeigh? Johnny Randolph's real genius was in hiring people, in locating talent, allowing them to develop into the best personalities they could be, and running interference with management so that these people had the creative freedom to do what they needed to do. Johnny's a very shrewd, crafty programmer, and he has a great sense of marketing and promotion. But as a mentor to talents and as somebody who knew how to identify somebody who had great potential and then let them develop that potential was really Johnny's strongest attribute in my view. Mike McVeigh, you could tell from an early point that he was going going to be a major player in the industry. Of course, he came to Louisville from Los Angeles, so he had already worked in the big time. But Mike is a tremendously organized, thoughtful, intelligent programmer. It was a great pleasure to work with him. And of course, many years later, I would end up working for him as a consultant for McVeigh Media. Question six, tell me a little bit about some of the guys you worked with. Bill Bailey, Coyote Calhoun, Gary King, and anybody else of note. Any stories, thoughts, etc. That's a 7-hour answer if there ever was one. Bill Bailey, I think, was the most talented person that I ever worked with or against, for that matter. Bill Bailey was a genius. Now, he and Gary Burbank, in my book, are both geniuses. The difference is, and Gary will be the first person to tell you this, Gary spends hours of time off the air in preparation for his show, and writing and recording and planning, and whereas Bailey would just walk in and any show prep he had done was strictly in his head. Bailey didn't even use phones on the air. He didn't know how to get telephones. I don't think he knew how to patch the phone through the board. So since he didn't have anybody to play off of, he would either play off the news person or he would talk to himself, which kind of got to be a characteristic of his show. But when Bill was in form, it was almost like listening to Mark Twain live. Bill would start telling a story and it would be seamless. There were no pauses, no hesitations. It was a fully conceived work of art from beginning to end, and yet, so far as I know, it was almost entirely extemporaneous. He was a tremendously funny guy, and he was a great guy to work with. You know, part of my job, as described to me by the president of Multimedia Corporation, was to go out with Bill whenever Bill went on a bender and to make sure that the bar tab was settled and there weren't any fights and that he got home safely. So I was the only guy that I know of whose job description included getting drunk for a long time. But Bill was always a very generous, thoughtful guy. And I have to say, sometimes when I listen to old air checks of my work with him, I still cringe at some of the things I said and wonder why he didn't just slap me upside the head, because I probably deserved it. But he was very protective and very considerate with people that he worked with and was a fine gentleman. A talented artist, too, by the way, that a lot of people don't realize. Coyote Calhoun and I met actually before I came to Wacky, when I came down to visit Gary Burbank before I joined the station in June of 1976. Coyote and I became very close friends, and he remains one of my closest friends to this day. Of course, he's now a member of the Country Music DJ Hall of Fame. He could have just as easily qualified for the Country Radio Hall of Fame. Coyote, because he is such an extravagant, colorful figure, has never gotten the credit that he deserves as a programmer and as an air personality. He's extremely talented and, like Randolph, very shrewd and has a sense of empathy with the audience that's better than just about anybody that I've met in this industry. Gary King is a name that you don't hear very often anymore, and I really don't know why. He was a valuable member of that air staff, doing middays, very popular. Gary deserves a lot more credit than he seems to get these days. A couple of other people that I would put in that category of underrated are Chuck Jackson. Chuck did 10 to 2 for a long time at night, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and was a mainstay of the Wacky staff in the mid to late 70s. And Bill Popcorn Purdom from Harrodsburg. Bill was a tremendously creative guy. Later went on to work in radio in Philadelphia. What made Wacky such a big success? Why is it fondly remembered by both Kentuckians and people in the radio industry today? I think the answer to that has to be the quality of the talent that worked there, and that quality goes back to the early days, and I became aware of this when Wacky evolved into an oldies station, and people like Jack Sanders and Tim Tyler and Weird Beard set the standard in the late 50s and early 60s, and then because of the reputation of the station, I suppose, it continued to attract talent. People wanted to work at Wacky. There was also the factor of the competition with WKLO. It was always a war, you know. It was two teams that were fighting it out to the death, and so you always wanted to be on your best because you didn't want to get beat by the other guys. But I think it's largely a reflection of the quality of the talent that passed through the radio market as a whole in those days. Was it difficult to move from being a jock to a news person? Not particularly difficult for me. I had studied journalism at the University of Missouri, had started out with the idea of being a television news person, had done news at WOAI in San Antonio before I moved to an air shift there. So I actually had some background in news and journalism and enjoyed doing that, especially enjoyed doing it in a role where I could work with Bill Bailey, and there was a creative aspect to being the sidekick as well as being a straight journalist. Can you tell about how and when Wacky evolved from a top 40 station to AC to Oldies? Talk about how you became a PD. That evolution had to do, of course, with the general evolution of AM radio, starting in the late 70s, I guess, and continuing to this day. As FM stations came along and became a better vehicle for music because of the technical enhancements, the days of Wacky as a music station, I suppose, were numbered. In desperation, it went from being a top 40 to being an adult contemporary station, partly because we had the personalities there that could carry that load. Mike McVeigh was there at the time, and we had folks that understood AC and that were high-profile personalities and were really suited for that. But again, an AM adult contemporary station was limited in how well it was ever going to do. The transition to Oldies was interesting. As Wacky became an AC station, I had left the morning show and was on afternoon drive. And part of my deal when I came there was a five-day week. And as the station's financial situation became more dire, they came to me one day and they said, well, you're going to have to do a six-day week. And that was a real problem for me. So the compromise that we finally agreed upon was that I would do a six-day if I could come in with my own records and play whatever I wanted to play on Sunday night. And that was the origin of a show called Fourth Street Sunday Night. And people forget that in the first couple of months, it was largely an eclectic mix of music, but it evolved into a straight oldie show and concentrated on the heritage of Wacky and the rock and roll heritage of Louisville. A lot of the local groups that were and are still around, the Monarchs, Epics, Sultans, Cosmo and the Counts, those kind of people. The ratings on Sunday night were just astronomical, particularly among adults. It was the highest rated day part of the week. So later they came to me and they said, we want you to repeat the show on Saturday night. So we would take Sunday's show and repeat it the following Saturday night. So I was on 7 days a week, although one of them was on tape. And then they came to me and they said, and we want you to do a live show on Saturday. So I said, you know, I don't mind being on 7 days a week, but 8 days a week is asking a little bit too much. And so I got mad and I quit and sat around. It's the only time I've ever been out of work in this business. And I sat around for about 6 weeks. And to my surprise, got a call from Paul Fittick, who was the head of multimedia broadcasting at the time. And he said, we want you to take 4th Street and turn it into a format. We want to make a Wacky and Oldies station. Well, that sounds like an obvious move now, I guess. But at the time, there were very few all-oldies stations anywhere. WCBS-FM in New York. And I think there was an all-oldies station in Tulsa, but that was about it. So in terms of being an all-oldies station with no current music whatsoever, Wacky was a pioneer, and it went over very well. The station went from about and I'm using my memory here, and these numbers are not exact, but something like a 2.5 to a 7 in the first book in 1982 as an oldies station. But once people saw that, the dynamics of the market started to change very quickly. When Wacky became the oldies station, you could literally go an entire year in Louisville and most other markets and never hear a Roy Orbison song or an Everly Brothers song or a Herman's Hermit song. But when people saw that there was a market for that, then you had stations like WRKA would start doing the 60s at 6 and the 70s at 7, and other people came along with oldie shows. I think Joe Donovan already had an overnight oldie show at the time on WHAS, but the point is that that unique programming got co-opted to the point where that's no longer very unusual. But the station was the Billboard Radio Station of the Year in 1982 in its format category, which was miscellaneous formats because there were so few oldies stations at the time. I think we were thrown in there with jazz and whatever else there was. Why did you leave and when? Well, as the programming was co-opted, the fortunes of the station continued to decline. I was still fairly well compensated, but it became doubtful that that was going to continue much longer. So I could see the handwriting on the wall, particularly after Multimedia sold the station to some people from out of town that really didn't have a clue. And they certainly didn't have any respect for the heritage of Wacky. I can remember literally diving into a dumpster and rescuing photographs and slides and air checks and pieces of memorabilia that the new owners had just thrown away in the trash. As all of this was going on, it was clear that I needed to find something else to do. And so in August of 85, I heard from George Francis. George had been general manager at Wacky when Mike McVeigh was the program director. George and I had remained good friends, and he had just bought some radio stations in Shreveport, and one of them was a country station, and wanted me to join him there. And I had been looking for an excuse to get into country anyway. It had always been my favorite kind of music, and particularly through my friendship with Coyote, I developed a pretty good background in it. So I took that opportunity in 1985 to move to KRMD in Shreveport and start my country radio career. What did you do after you left Wacky? What are you doing today? Well, as I said, I went to KRMD in Shreveport. That was a great rating success, too. We were taking on the Heritage station there and were very successful in becoming the dominant country station in that market. That success got me a job at WPOC in Baltimore, working for Nationwide Communications, and I stayed there nearly 10 years. At the end of 1996, I originally had intended to set up my own consultancy in Nashville, had resigned and was on the way to doing that. When Mike McVeigh called, a voice from my Wacky past, and his country consultant, Charlie Cook, had just decided to leave, and he needed someone to fill Charlie's shoes. And I said, no, thanks. I've got my own deal going. And he said, well, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. And I said, well, we'll see about that. And he did make me an offer I couldn't refuse. And I ended up working for Mike for 3 or 4 years. After that time, went in-house with my leading client, Regent Communications. I was already consulting all of the Regent country stations, and they gave me an opportunity to come in-house and work with them full-time. I must say, as much as I enjoy all of the places that I've worked in the history and the heritage, I've never enjoyed a job more than the job that I have now with Regent Communications.